another episode of Disciple Hinson. This is Daniel Schreiner, Associate Pastor at Hinson, and I am joined with Mark Whitcomb. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Dan.
Jeff has not run away to the Midwest. He is actually here in the room, more than 6 feet away. He is, of course, the producer of the show. And we are here to talk about the topic of post-apocalyptic movies.
I don't know that I prepared for that.
No, we're going to talk about finances, since you didn't prepare for that. Mark, how are you guys doing, or what have you been doing during this time of quarantine other than growing out your hair and beard?
Yeah, well, that's a continued process. But a lot of the time has still been focused on administrative responsibilities, but also really seeing a lot of time freed up to call people, text people, email, and just check in with the church body. And then some added extra time at home, which has been good.
That's excellent. Hanging out with the kids. How is the family doing in this time of feeling probably cooped up?
Yeah, actually, we're actually doing really well. Our kids function really well on tight schedules, and so they've been really excited to have a more formalized schedule, and that's been exciting.
A lot of wisdom in the schedule. What do you feel like God has been teaching you guys during this time? Any reflections as you think about the uncertainty of the future?
Yeah, I think that's probably been, like many of us, it's been one of the big things for me. I'm a planner, so I have the schedule thought out pretty far, and that's all being held very loosely right now because plans are changing. And so, if anything, in my own heart, it's forced me to even a further dependence on God's control, his sovereignty, and holding kind of my ideas and plans very loosely, which really right now has been wonderful to just focus on kind of 1 week at a time.
Yeah.
Which is not typically how my brain functions. And I think that's been really good for me, even in my own heart. But I think even reflecting in general on the idea of the pandemic is the reality that it's going to end. And there are a lot of things that are changing now in my own life and schedule and in culture of how we function that are going to just change going forward. I think when we look back in the coming decades on kind of this moment in history, we're going to see a lot of things that just change for us and how we function as a society, which is really interesting to try to think about what those changes will look like.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I read one writer say, what are you going to tell your grandkids when they ask you how you spent your time during the COVID-19 kind of lockdown or quarantine? And having that kind of perspective that you're talking about, I think is really useful that we might be an encouragement to, God willing, our grandchildren when they ask us about those kinds of things.
Yep.
Well, one of the challenges that many of us are facing during this time is the challenge of our finances. So the quarantine has affected many people's jobs, businesses, savings, portfolios. So we thought that it would be good for us to have a conversation about money, and particularly about what it might look like for us to care for one another during this time. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we go there, let's begin by thinking about God's care for us. You already started sharing some encouragement, but anything to add about what encouragement would you have for us in thinking about how God has blessed us?
Yeah, as I was reflecting on kind of where we're at and the things that might concern us, I was actually reminded of the sermons that Jeff has been preaching through in Ephesians, which really bring us to an assurance of the work that God has already done, right? That Christ has met our greatest need. And therefore, I can face some of the difficulties of life, whether that's concern over finances or health, with a lot more assurance of the fact that if I have salvation through Jesus Christ, I have no other fears, right? I have no other concerns that can take away from that. That's my assurance. And that's really where we have to start, right? That has to be the foundation of whatever we're approaching is God has met my greatest need, first and foremost.
And so what implications does that perspective have when we begin to have a conversation about finances? Why is it important that we start there? Unpack that just a little bit more for us.
Yeah. Obviously, if God's met our greatest need there in salvation, that means, one, I can hold my finances loosely, right? I don't have to hold those things tightly and act as if that's what is going to make or break me. But it also puts into perspective the fact that if God has given me the most important thing that I need in salvation, he's also met all my other needs, and therefore, whatever he's given me is something for me to steward, right? Those are kind gifts of God. It is common grace in a way that he's given us wonderful blessings. I think particularly for us in the U.S., right, we've been given wonderful blessings, probably above and beyond many other nations in the world, particularly financially and what we have economically. And the fact that we should recognize that as something that God's given us to steward, that we should treat those responsibilities as a gift from God that we're returning really to him, right? We leave that in his hands, that whatever he gives us, we want to use to point other people to the gospel and to that hope, instead of using it for our own means, right? Because it's easy to quickly turn that into idolatry.
Right. And that's so helpful. And that's what we just want to have a conversation about today. And really, that's how we should always be thinking about the topic of money mm-hmm. as Christians. It's not that we can't find useful advice and from financial advisors and from the world. But when we're talking about money as Christians, fundamentally, we're talking about it as a stewardship issue.
Yeah.
How can we be faithful stewards of what God has given to us since yeah. he has everything that we have has come from him and belongs to him ultimately? So that's kind of how we want to frame this conversation. Let's dig in a little bit into how we see the New Testament talk about how Christians are to care for one another. What do we see in the New Testament about how Christians are to care for one another that might be particularly helpful during this time of crisis for so many financially?
Yeah, there are a lot of verses, I guess not surprisingly, throughout the New Testament that talk about our money, how we should handle these gifts that God has given us. But I think a great place to start is 1 Timothy 5:8. It says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Therefore, we recognize providing for family seems to be really our most kind of basic responsibility. At the very least, we need to be providing for those that are within our responsibility, the family unit. We have to start there.
Great. So in terms of priority, I think, you know, the world would understand that as well, but we certainly want to be examples of that. I think maybe if we're zealous Christians, maybe we would cause our family to suffer because potentially we're giving so much away to charity, to missions, to our local church. But that's a helpful place to start. But what about any instruction that the New Testament gives us when it comes to giving to the church? How should we think about that priority? You've talked about the biological family. What about the spiritual family of faith?
Yeah. Galatians 6, Paul points us to, let the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches, is instruction to be giving to those who oversee the flock. Which in one sense is always a little awkward for us to say, and yet important for us to recognize that Scripture is very clear, right? Those who are pastors and elders of the church, we should be providing for them. But there's also really clear instruction we see as the church begins in Acts 2 and Acts 4, how the church body is coming together to provide for one another, to care for one another. Those are probably the easiest texts for us to jump to when we really start dwelling on how did the church care for each other. We recognize they left no one who was needy. They were caring for everybody so that all their needs were met in that context of a new family that was brought together, not by blood relative, but because of the work Christ had done on the cross, that relationship.
Yeah, that's really helpful. It's interesting that Jesus himself talks about money, I think, more than he talks about heaven and hell combined.
That's right.
And lots of parables that we could go to kind of from a macro level on how to think about what we were just talking about a couple minutes ago in terms of faithful stewardship, living in light of eternity. But then maybe you pointed us to Galatians 6. We could also go to 1 Corinthians 16:2 mm-hmm. about how we are to give to the local church as kind of a first fruits. To set something aside and to keep it in line with our income. So we could give a lot of instruction just from the New Testament letters themselves about how and why we are to give and what that looks like. But putting that all together, putting all those texts together, have there been any helpful resources for you as you and Jen have thought about the priority of giving to the local church, what it looks like to care for the poor in our midst? Any like books or articles that you would point people to?
What's really interesting, I'm grateful, obviously, first and foremost, like we're doing, studying these texts here, has been really, really helpful for Jen and I, and just settling ourselves in the text. What has Christ instructed us to do? Another simple thing is actually being willing to be honest with our finances, with other people, and to let other people into our lives. So it's not particularly a written resource, but someone that you can trust that can speak into your life about how you're using your money has been really good. On a certain level, one of the things Jen and I started early on with and have kind of adapted, as I would suggest most people would do, are taking some principles from Dave Ramsey and just applying those to our own household, but realizing we're not just full-on committed without thinking about how that applies to us specifically. And taking general principles out of that Financial Peace University has been really, really helpful. I don't know if there are any other resources that you'd suggest at the moment, Dan, that you guys have gone through.
I love the little book by Randy Alcorn called The Treasure Principle.
Yeah.
I've recommended that. It's a really short read, just helpful and kind of framing the conversation from a biblical perspective. And like I talked about, putting together some of these texts. But I love what you said about opening up your finances and how you steward those and even being detailed about that. Like, here's our family budget. Another trusted brother or sister in the church sitting down and saying, what do you think of this? Yep. What? How can I grow? Am I being faithful? Can I be giving more? Should I be saving more? Should I be providing, you know, hospitality and generosity in more creative ways and getting some feedback? I think it's so interesting. Jesus obviously has so much to say about money and money and parenting and our marriages are such huge parts of our discipleship. And yet in today's culture, we're so often so private about those issues, which encompass so much of our walk with Christ and are really telling about where our heart is with the Lord. And yet we, unfortunately, I think, close those areas off to our brothers and sisters, to good friends.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because it creates, like I said earlier, this measure of idolatry that we're worshiping that, and it's actually ends up being self-worship. This ultimately starts with, can you even have a conversation with your spouse, right? That creates a level of intimacy that we can communicate about where our finances are at, how we're spending money and why we're doing that. And then allowing that conversation to grow to trusted brothers and sisters in Christ who can speak into it. It continues to point to, what is your heart set on? Where is your treasure being found? Is it on this earth? Is it something you feel like you have to guard at all costs? Or can you be open about it and talk about it?
I love that point about having helpful and prayerful conversations with your spouse if you're married about this topic. You and I do a good bit of premarital counseling, and we meet up with singles in the church. One of the things that I have found, and this was certainly true for me personally, is it wasn't until I started to think about marriage or was even engaged that I myself had a budget.
Yep.
And so thinking about serving our single brothers and sisters well, maybe one of the things that we could do, those of us who are married, who kind of the being forced to grow up in a particular way, like marriage can force some of us immature, more brothers to do, guys, is come alongside single brothers and sisters and help them think through their budget, help them think through stewardship.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our current day, because we've been kind of talking about this in terms of general principles, and we've recommended some resources, but certainly we can't cover all that we would like to cover on money and stewardship in one podcast episode. So we want to drill down just for the next 10 minutes or so and think about our current day. The situation that we have found ourselves in, the news is, you know, really covering this downturn in the markets. We just had the stimulus bill, the largest kind of relief bill in world history passed in our country. And I think so. People's finances are on their minds right now. And what does it look like to be a faithful steward in this day? So we just want to kind of, again, start this conversation that hopefully people can be having in their discipleship and in their homes. Just any general thoughts on how we should be responding in this current day that we find ourselves in?
Yeah. And I do want to qualify kind of with what we're going to say is the reality that there isn't necessarily very clear biblical principles in all these things. But our principles kind of applied in generality. So we might disagree on some things within the church, and that's okay. But are we able to talk through this and think through it together?
That's a really helpful qualifier.
So what I would say is something that I'm trying to practice as well. Right, we're in a time where things are a little unsure. Many people, if not, you know, I'm sure some who are listening have lost jobs. They're not sure where their income's going to come from. I think all of us across the board, whether we're still making money or whether we're not, should be doing what we can to cut our finances, to save during a time like this. And that's not so we can hoard that money to ourselves, but to be finding ways to save so that we can help others. And so, you know, for me, what does that look like? It's looked like, what are non-essentials that I don't need? What are things that I can go without that are food or drink that maybe I just don't purchase for a while that'll help me save, you know, $50 in a month? Whatever it might be, I'm trying to cut out things in my life, in what I'm doing, that would allow me to save money, to be better prepared to help other people when those needs arise. And I think I want to challenge all of us to be doing that, rather than thinking long term, how can I save just for myself, or I'm doing okay, I don't need to save. No, let's be saving so we're better prepared to help each other.
That's really helpful. I recently, I don't know if you came across this article, but I think it was in the New York Times, like maybe 2 months ago or something like that, Ross Douthat had a piece about the decadence of our culture and society. And he wasn't just talking about luxurious living, but how kind of unimaginable for people even 100, 150 years ago it would have been if they could have seen our decadent lives today.
Yep.
And maybe something like this crisis that we have found ourselves will wake us up to consider maybe things that we can go without for the good of others, because we are so programmed as consumers to think that we should always pursue more money, more comfort, more ease, more pleasure. And our finances all too often reflect that, I think.
Yeah. And I'm actually trying to have, you know, my kids are still really small. They're only 7, 5, and 3, but I'm actually having these conversations with them. Because I want them to understand. Yeah, even the other day, they're just asking me, you know, why can't we buy this new toy? And I just said, you know, now's not a time for us to be putting our money in place like that. You have other toys you can be playing with. Like, we're okay. You don't have to have more stuff. And helping kind of teach them some biblical principles on being satisfied with the gifts that we do have. And then pointing them to, we're going to take a time to save so that we're better prepared to help other people who are in need. And by God's grace, maybe they're getting some of that.
That's great. So it sounds like when my kids badger me for new things, I should just send them down to your house.
That'd
so you guys
great.
Have a stash saved for such things. Just any quick counsel, Mark, on investing and borrowing during this time, anything that you've heard that you think would be helpful for the church?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously I'm not a financial advisor, so I can't really give any solid advice. And the reality is we never know what's going to happen with markets and economies. But with best guesses, I was on a phone call with an investment group just a couple days ago, and they were just talking about how quickly, at this particular time, this virus has hit. You know, it's very fast. And their calculations and assumptions are, in one sense, the economy will rebound just as quickly because of something like the stimulus package, because this isn't qualified as a depression. It's more of a recession. And so they're anticipating that actually markets will change quite quickly. Really, they're hopeful by the end of the year into the beginning of next calendar year. And I think, yeah, for those who have means and ability, we should continue to invest as it's wise. It seems like we've been waiting for this bubble to pop for quite a few years. And now that it has, is a good time to invest. And borrowing has never been, in one sense, more affordable. But that comes with a lot of wisdom, right? I do not think people should be taking money out of their 401ks to pay for things or to invest in other ways. I think if you have a retirement plan, continue to build on that as you're able to. But now is a good time to be using our money wisely in investments or borrowing as God would lead.
Coming out of Michael's sermon from, was it this last Sunday or two Sundays ago? What about investing in toilet paper?
Seems a profitable investment at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Good. any thoughts as we think about caring for one another in the church in particular?
Yeah.
How should we think about giving to one another directly?
Yeah.
We hear of a need in the church. How should we think about maybe God has given us the resources where we could be a part of helping meet a particular need? How should we think about that?
Yeah, I've had this conversation actually, probably a dozen times over the last 2 weeks. So I'm really grateful that our congregation is starting to think through this. Here's how I've tried to even direct my own thoughts. I think as we're in relationship with other people, as those needs become evident, we should feel compelled to meet those needs. I shouldn't feel like I have to wait for the elders to help that person or someone else. As needs arise and I'm talking to somebody and I have that relationship with them, if I'm able to meet that need and it seems wise, I'm going to meet that need, right? I'm going to take that step to care for that brother or sister who's in need. But there are going to be situations where maybe I don't know all the circumstances behind their need, or I'm concerned that they're not handling themselves well financially. That's why we have something like the Benevolence Fund that allows the elders to provide for people's needs through the gifts of the church, and it allows us to have a voice into that person's life to help provide instruction and shepherd them through their financial needs so that they're not just spending tons of money going further in debt if they could be making better choices.
That's great. So any other advantages of giving to the Benevolence Fund? Say that you're in that camp where you're not aware of any specific needs in the church, and there's this Benevolence Fund set up. You know, how should we think about prioritizing that maybe versus the general giving?
Yeah. So in one sense, one practical advantage between just giving to somebody you know versus giving to the Benevolent Fund is a gift to the church, so it is tax deductible. But on a more important level, giving to the Benevolence Fund allows the elders to elder in a very unique way, in a way that impacts whole families of how they function, how they relate. And it gives us a wonderful opportunity for pastoral word into their life. And there are a number of people who will come directly to the elders looking for help financially, but even advice, wisdom going forward, how they pay for things. And so that allows us specifically in that Benevolent Fund to help our church body as a whole. I'm careful to pit giving to the general fund and benevolent fund beside each other. Obviously, in our general fund, we're needing to pay a lot of our bills and the day-to-day things for our continuing to help our church operate. But that benevolent fund gives us kind of a unique opportunity to speak into the lives of people in a very pastoral way. And so, yeah, I think for our congregation, as we pray about what God would have us give, is to think about what we set aside for the general day-to-day and support of the ministry and what we set aside to care for those who are in need.
That's a great case for giving to the church in general, but to how to think through both funds. I would qualify, because we talked about giving to one another directly and then balancing that with giving to the Benevolence Fund. It's kind of in the same arena, giving to meet practical needs in the congregation. One thing that you would miss out on if you just always gave to the Benevolence Fund and never gave to a brother or sister in the church under financial need, one of the things you might miss out on is, I think it's in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus talks about using our money for the sake of relationship and to build in a personal way into someone's life, not to like so much buy leverage in a relationship. We should never think about it that way, but to it's an opportunity to be a blessing and to be an encouragement to a brother and sister in a unique way. So I think, but there's advantages to both, aren't there?
Yeah, and I would actually put that giving directly to another brother or sister in the category of discipleship.
Yes, you know, that's great.
You're providing an opportunity to point that person to Christ, to say, God's provided for me in all that I have, and now I have an opportunity to help provide for you and point you to the gospel.
That's great. Okay. Couple more questions I want to think about with you, Mark, but this has been really helpful. What if you are experiencing financial need yourself? You're looking at your maybe student debt or debt from other things, and it's just really rough. How should you think through this as a Christian if you're in particular financial need?
Yeah. First and foremost, as we mentioned early on, this is an area that we all need to grow in transparency. We need to, you know, if I have financial need, I need to be ready to ask others to help. That's both giving and advising on how I'm using my money. Maybe I'm being unfaithful with what God's given me. I think we should be asking other Christians to be praying that God would provide. God promises to care for our needs. And if there are needs that have to be met in order for me to survive, then I anticipate God's going to provide for that. And I should be asking other people to pray that we could rejoice in God's faithfulness to his people. But then I think the other aspect there is being willing to come to the elders to ask for help. I hope that those in our congregation are willing to come and talk to the elders and say, this is an area that I need help in. Would you pray about this? Would you consider meeting my need? And allow the elders to speak into that. It's again, kind of opening our hand instead of keeping a closed hand to our finances to say, I want someone else to speak into that, to give advice and to love me well in this way.
That's great. If you're listening to this and that's the situation you find yourself in, that you're in financial need, or maybe you know a brother or sister in the church in financial need, during this time, one good question to ask yourself or to ask a brother and sister is that if you're not asking for help from the elders, is maybe one of the reasons why you're not because of your own pride.
Yeah.
Because it's so anti-Christian in one sense. I mean, this is what we're struggling with day in, day out, right? To be self-sufficient. And that just goes back to how we opened this conversation, considering that all that we have has been given to us by God, and he owns it all. So if you're able to kind of start with that perspective, I think that can help even frame how you think about your times of need, and are you willing to ask for help? And I think we all need to grow in humility in that. I know that I have struggled with that in the past, is because I think we're such a, especially as an American culture, kind of get it done ourselves. You know, we can do it.
Right.
But we can model a more humble spirit in that.
Yeah, and I think that's probably an area we should be encouraging each other to just pray for one another during this time, right? As we face, you know, there are people who are going to be facing fears of not having an income or fears of getting sick. But I think part of it is praying for one another that we would approach this odd time that we're living in with just a lot of wisdom and faith and trust in the stewardship of what we've been given, that God has given us what we need.
That's great. Any other financial questions that people are asking or any financial advice that you would give to kind of close us out today, Mark?
I think there's probably one other thing that a few folks have brought up to me over the last couple of weeks, which are folks who are getting tax returns and thinking about what does it look like to even invest that more long-term in Henson. We have the wonderful gift of having a Bruce Fund and a Siemens Fund that are set up. We actually have several people right now who are giving to those funds to help us. One, the Bruce Fund is directed towards kind of new ministry pursuits, both globally and locally. The Siemens Fund is more for training, helping get folks through seminary. And those are great funds to be giving to. Part of that is because of how low the market has gotten. Those funds are going to grow exponentially in the coming months and years. So giving towards a fund like that can be really helpful.
How would you do that?
Yeah, as I say, if you have questions about that, you'll just want to contact me directly, and I can talk to you about what it looks like to give towards those funds.
That's great. Mark, Thanks for joining us in the studio today.
Thanks for the invite.
We hope to have you back sometime. This is hopefully a helpful conversation that spurs you guys who are listening on to more conversations in your discipleship, in your families. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.